Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK Japan. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Let's start with some of the headlines describing the attempted coup at the U.S. Capitol. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and most other European leaders condemn the actions incited by Donald Trump. Several months ago, German opponents of the COVID restrictions attempted to storm the German parliament, but were soundly put down by police. The extradition to the United States of Australian journalist Julian Assange was stopped by a British judge on the grounds that it would damage his mental health, while agreeing with most of the charges against him. Deutsche Welle discussed the case with a director of Reporters Without Borders, who criticized the judge for dismissing all of the defense arguments. The U.S. intends to appeal the ruling, but when his attorney sought bail, the judge refused, making Julian remain in the maximum security Belmarsh prison. Brief reports on Sudan and Israel, Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Iran says it seized a South Korean oil tanker because it was polluting the Gulf, and there were mass arrests in Hong Kong of pro-democracy activists. Then brief pieces on the COVID pandemic and vaccines. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Well, around the world, there was disbelief at the scenes that unfolded in the U.S. Capitol. Just look at these front pages we've prepared for you. Germany's Bild newspaper talking of a coup attempt and a moment of great shame. In Britain, the Daily Telegraph also not mincing their words, democracy under siege. And the picture of Trump supporters storming the Capitol also dominating the United Arab Emirates Gulf News Daily. And the Nigerian Tribune with this blistering verdict, Trump supporters defile democracy. As we've seen, the news from the U.S. created shockwaves here in Germany. Chancellor Angela Merkel expressed her regret at President Trump's persistent refusal to accept the election result and the consequences of that refusal.
The violence in Washington has been met with disbelief in the German government. The condemnation was led by Angela Merkel herself.
We all saw the unsettling pictures of the US Congress being stormed yesterday evening, and these images made me angry and also sad. And I very much regret that since November, President Trump has not acknowledged his defeat and failed again to do so yesterday. Doubts about the outcome of the election were stoked, and that set the stage for what made Wednesday's events possible in the first place.
Germany's president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, was even more outspoken. The scenes that we saw are the result of lies and ever more lies, of divisiveness and disdain for democracy, of hate and incitement from even the very highest quarters. Adding to the sense of alarm, just months ago here in Berlin, a far-right mob tried to break into Germany's parliament during a protest over pandemic restrictions. They failed to get in. Now events in Washington are a chilling echo.
I was very, very shocked. These pictures reminded me of the situation at the German parliament when conspiracy theorists stormed the Bundestag. What was really bad was that in the USA, of all places, people managed to get through. There was no police. No one could stop them. Terrible. I didn't expect something like this, but I guess you can't expect anything else from Trump.
Trump's time in office is nearly up, but the aftershocks of this week will last for much longer, not just in Washington, but all over the Western world.
A court in London ruled that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange cannot be extradited to the United States to face espionage charges. The judge said it would be oppressive and would damage his mental health. Assange is an Australian citizen who could face up to 175 years in prison if the U.S. successfully appeals. His lawyers have applied for him to be released on bail.
With news trickling out of the courtroom came chants of celebration from Julian Assange's supporters. Ecstatic that after 10 years of legal fights, they finally had some form of victory. Celebration and cheering.
This protects him from extradition in the United Kingdom, but it doesn't protect him from extradition elsewhere around the world. It is time for the United States to shut down this extraordinary prosecution, which has massive free speech implications. And I certainly hope that this will be the end of this case.
Earlier, Assange's team began the day with low expectations. His fiancée called on Donald Trump to pardon the father of her two children.
As long as Julian has to endure suffering and isolation as an unconvicted prisoner in Belmarsh prison, and as long as our children continue to be bereft of their father's love and affection, we cannot celebrate. We will celebrate the day he comes home.
Inside the courtroom, the judge dismissed most of Assange's defence, but she conceded that his mental health was such that to extradite him would be oppressive. This lengthy legal battle began with a video that shocked the world. Assange released classified footage of US Apache helicopters killing Iraqi civilians and journalists.
It will shape an understanding of what the past 6 years of war has been like.
The US accused him and WikiLeaks of being enemy combatants. For the past decade, through thick and thin, Assange always maintained that he was a journalist. The saga is not over yet. The US government has said it will appeal the decision.
Let's take a closer look at this with Rebecca Vincent, who's Director of International Campaigns at Reporters Without Borders. This is an odd sort of victory. Julian Assange would have been extradited if he'd been in better mental health.
Absolutely. And so while we are relieved as Reporters Without Borders that he will not be extradited, which is good news for Mr. Assange and his family, the rest of the decision that we heard today was quite concerning. All of the substantive points, really, the judge found overwhelmingly in the prosecution's favor. She rejected key aspects of the defense, including points that we firmly believe at Reporters Without Borders, such as the fact that this case is politically motivated and that it centers on journalism. So we were deeply disappointed with that substance, because that means that the door is then left open for possible future similar prosecutions of other publishers, journalists and sources.
And so what is it about this case that so concerned you? Because we must all obey the law, even journalists.
So the question with journalism is always if something is in the public interest defense, right? So in the US, the Espionage Act, under which 17 of the charges against Mr. Assange stem from, lacks a public interest defense. Had he been sent to the US to face trial there, he would have been unable to defend himself, as would any other publisher, journalist or source that could be prosecuted under those charges. So that very law needs reform. Otherwise, the door is left open for future manipulation against journalists. And when you look at the substance of this case, really, not all of the misperceptions about Mr. Assange, not all of the other things that have happened in the years since, but what was actually being considered in these extradition proceedings, he did not break the law in any way that the U.S. government sufficiently proved. We have monitored the entire extradition proceedings here, including the week of legal arguments in February and the 4 weeks of evidence heard in September. And so far, we have still not seen any credible evidence from the U.S. government for the vast majority of the accusations it makes against Mr. Assange.
You say that the U.S. government has not proved its case, but surely that's what a court case is for.
Well, not if the case is political. And so that was one aspect of today's decision that we were most disappointed with, is the judge dismissing that, because this was absolutely politically motivated. We firmly believe that Mr. Assange was targeted for his contributions to journalism, for publishing information in the public interest that exposed war crimes and other illegal behavior by the U.S. government. Now, political offense in itself is meant to be a bar to extradition from the U.K. And that is one aspect that we really disagree with the judge's decision here today. That in and of itself should have been enough to stop him being extradited.
But if, as the US government contends, Mr. Assange's revelations put informants' lives at risk, then someone should be accountable for that.
Well, that is one area that the U.S. government systematically failed to prove. They have not, in 10 years, showed evidence of a single person that has been physically harmed as the result of the publication of the leaked documents. And I'm sorry, in 10 years and with the vast resources that the U.S. government has put into pursuing Mr. Assange, had there been any credible evidence of any of this harm, they would have submitted it to the court for scrutiny. But they did not. And quite the contrary, we heard actually in September evidence from those who actually, the publication of the leaked documents helped their own human rights cases. In fact, there was one case of a torture victim, somebody who had been the result of a mistaken identity, had been rendered and tortured by U.S. forces. And so this is the sort of information that was exposed by the leaked cables. It is these acts that should be prosecuted, not the publication of the documents themselves.
Thank you so much for joining us. Rebecca Vincent from Reporters Without Borders.
A British judge has denied bail to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange 2 days after blocking his extradition to the US, where he's wanted on espionage charges. The judge said there were sufficient grounds to believe that Assange would not turn up to court for a pending US appeal if he were to be released from prison.
Sudan has signed an agreement to normalize relations with Israel. It's the fourth Arab country to establish diplomatic relations with the Jewish state in as many months. The U.S. brokered deal will allow Sudan to clear some of its massive debt with the World Bank.
Saudi Arabia is opening its air, sea, and land borders with Qatar. It's a first step toward ending a diplomatic crisis that has deeply divided U.S. allies in the region since 2017. The lifting of the embargo paves the way for Qatar's ruler to attend Tuesday's summit of Gulf leaders in Saudi Arabia.
Iran has denied seizing a South Korean oil tanker in order to pressure Seoul into releasing billions of dollars frozen because of U.S. sanctions over Tehran's nuclear program. Iranian troops stormed the vessel in the Persian Gulf on Monday, claiming it was breaching pollution rules.
There's been widespread international condemnation of the Hong Kong authorities after the mass arrests of pro-democracy opposition figures. 53 people were detained under Beijing's new security law. Western nations accused authorities of grave repression and a grievous attack on freedoms promised when Britain handed Hong Kong back to China.
Britain is to be the first country to begin vaccinating people with its own AstraZeneca shot. The vaccine is viewed as particularly promising for developing countries due to its low cost and less complicated storage. And in the U.S., officials are also considering delaying second doses of vaccines to spread the initial jabs out to a wider population. The U.K. announced a similar change in the vaccine schedule just days ago.
German firm BioNTech is warning against delaying the second shot of its COVID-19 vaccine beyond 3 weeks, saying that it has no data about effectiveness. Some countries have been postponing the second jab in an attempt to inoculate more people. Indonesia will begin a nationwide vaccination program on January 13th. President Joko Widodo will be given the first dose of the vaccine made by a Chinese firm. Brazil is reporting at least 2 cases of the new, more contagious coronavirus variant, one of them after contact with travelers from Europe. And Mexico has granted approval to the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine. That makes it the second vaccine to get the go-ahead there.
China has denied entry to a team from the World Health Organization trying to investigate the origins of the virus in Wuhan. Meanwhile, Chinese authorities have stepped up COVID restrictions around the capital, Beijing, following an increase in coronavirus cases in Hebei province. And South Korea is rolling out mass testing for 70,000 prisoners and staff after a recent prison outbreak in Seoul, and as medical facilities in the U.S. city of Los Angeles struggle to cope with a surge in cases, ambulance workers have been told they should not transport patients to hospitals if their chances of survival are very low.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuelan President Maduro says that the U.S., Britain, Spain, and Portugal refuse to unfreeze assets that are needed to acquire COVID vaccines. In an interview, one of the four Blackwater mercenaries pardoned by Trump for their massacre of Iraqi civilians in Baghdad, says that the attack was justified. There were demonstrations in Iraq and other Middle Eastern capitals on the anniversary of the U.S. drone assassination of Iranian General Soleimani and an Iraqi military leader, calling for the U.S. to leave Iraq. Iran says its defense is ready, as the U.S. military has retained an aircraft carrier in the Gulf, added nuclear submarines and two warships, and flown over with B-52 bombers. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has revealed that the United States, Britain, and some European Union states have rejected the country's appeal to unfreeze its sanctioned assets in order to purchase the much-needed coronavirus vaccine. Maduro went on record with, quote, "The governments and the financial institutions of Portugal, Spain, and the United Kingdom and the U.S. have blocked and frozen funds for access to a vaccine. We have asked the World Trade Organization to provide us with access to funds, and we were refused." The Venezuelan president further confirmed that the Vice President Delcy Rodriguez had held talks with the foreign ministers of Portugal, Spain, the UK, and the United States, who rejected the humanitarian request. Last week, Maduro announced that Venezuela had reached a deal with Russia for the supply of 10 million doses of Sputnik V, the Russian COVID-19 vaccine. In their persisting bid to overthrow Venezuela's elected president, Washington has led its European and Latin American allies to impose brutal financial sanctions on Venezuela, as well as other destabilizing measures to force him out of power, including multiple coups and assassination attempts. Even Sean Liberty, one of the four Blackwater security contractors pardoned last month by U.S. President Donald Trump, said in an interview with the Associated Press news agency, his first since being released from prison, quote, "I feel like I acted correctly during the deadly shooting in Baghdad's Central Square, in which 14 civilians were killed and 17 others were wounded." Liberty and three other former Blackwater employees, Nicholas Slatin, Paul Alvin Slough, and Dustin Laurent Hurd, were convicted for their roles in the massacre after a protracted, years-long legal process in the United States. The case sparked renewed criticism of the use of U.S. contractors in conflict zones. Trump's December 22nd pardon of the four mercenaries has drawn widespread condemnation from human rights advocates, lawyers, and others in the U.S. and in Iraq. U.S. prosecutors have long maintained that the Blackwater employees, who were contracted by the U.S. State Department in Iraq, launched an unprovoked attack on civilians involving grenade launchers, machine guns, and sniper fire. John Paterin Ether, the FBI agent who led the investigation into the incident, said in a New York Times letter to the editor published on Friday that he, quote, "spent many hours with the innocent Iraqi victims who were permanently maimed and crippled because of the actions of these Blackwater guards and the heartbroken family members of those killed." 1 year after a U.S. drone strike killed Iran's revered General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi militia commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, thousands of Iraqi mourners have condemned the American occupiers. The anniversary of their deaths in Baghdad that brought arch enemies, the US and Iran, to the brink of war was also marked in Iran on Sunday by protesters in Syria, Lebanon, Yemen and elsewhere in the Middle East. Streets in central Baghdad's Tahrir Square were packed with thousands of people who had converged on the site since early in the morning. They hoisted pictures of Soleimani and Abu Matid al-Mahandis together with flags of Iraq. The Hashd al-Shaabi, or Popular Mobilization Forces, the PMF, of which al-Mahandis was a leader. The protesters also carried barriers with slogans demanding the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq and calling for retaliation against those who carried out the assassinations. Major General Mohammad Bakiri, chairman of the Chiefs of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, said on Tuesday that the Iranian military was fully prepared to defend the country against any aggression. Referring to the ongoing military buildup by the, quote, terrorist and criminal military of the United States in the region and to accusations against Iran, Iran's top military commander said the country's armed forces are on alert and, quote, have their fingers on the trigger to respond to the slightest mistake by enemy forces in the region. Speaking on the sidelines of a large-scale drill by the Iranian army that he said was intended to show Iranian preparedness against military threats, Major General Bakiri warned, quote, although the Islamic Republic of Iran has no intention of carrying out an act of aggression and violation against any neighboring country, it is fully ready to counter any threat. Christopher Miller, acting U.S. Secretary of Defense, instructed the USS Nimitz over the weekend to remain in the Persian Gulf due to what he described as, quote, Iranian threats against President Trump and other U.S. government officials. This reversed an earlier decision to move the aircraft carrier out of the Middle East. Last week, two nuclear-capable American B-52 bombers flew over the Persian Gulf after non-stop flights to the region from their U.S.-based hangars. The nuclear-powered submarine USS Georgia has also arrived in the Persian Gulf, accompanied by two American warships.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for donations from listeners in Little River and Whitethorn, California. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with NHK World Radio Japan. An Iranian diplomat says that they will cease enriching uranium to 20% if the U.S. lifts economic sanctions. An American consulting firm, the Eurasia Group, has released its annual list of the top risks in the U.S., China, and beyond. NHK Japan.
A senior Iranian diplomat has told NHK that the country will stop enriching uranium to 20% purity if the U.S. lifts economic sanctions. Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi spoke on Wednesday in his first interview with foreign media since Iran began its 20% enrichment. The move significantly violates the 2015 nuclear deal with major powers known as the JCPOA. The deputy foreign minister said Iranians have suffered under U.S. sanctions for 4 years. He said he would work tirelessly to have them removed.
Once sanctions are again lifted, and once Iran can benefit from sanctions lifting in the JCPOA, we would obviously go back to our obligations. And 20% enrichment can be easily and swiftly reversed.
Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew from the nuclear agreement in 2018. Araghchi also commented on Washington's possible return to the pact.
There is no enthusiasm for the return of the U.S. The U.S. to the JCPOA. We don't open our arms to welcome them in the JCPOA. It is up to them to decide.
And referring to the incoming administration of President-elect Joe Biden, Arungchi said Iran will wait and see if the U.S. wants to return to the pact and on what terms. People in countries around the world start the new year knowing they will face some hazards. The American consulting firm Eurasia Group has released its annual list of top risks. Ian Bremmer is the president of Eurasia Group. NHK World's Catherine Kobayashi spoke with him about the risks in the U.S., China, and beyond.
Now we have a president in the United States, and almost half of the country is going to put an asterisk after his name, say that the election didn't count. Now, you and I both know that he won the election. But the United States is unprecedentedly politically divided right now, and vastly more than any other wealthy democracy in the world. And that is the number one risk.
Mr. Biden will assume responsibility for the fight against the coronavirus. Where do you see COVID in your assessment?
2021 is mostly going to be about how much economic suffering is continuing, and in fact is even growing, on the back of this coronavirus. Because in 2020, even though a lot of us got the healthcare wrong, we did provide a lot of money to ensure that the people that weren't a part of the knowledge economy, the people that were suffering, didn't have to worry about 3, 6, 12 months. That doesn't persist in 2021.
What risk do you see in the relationship between the U.S. and China?
But one area that's new is climate. Because as the United States is starting to focus much more on climate, the U.S. and the Chinese will both try to dominate the post-fossil fuel energy production environment. The Chinese have a big, big head start when you talk about solar or wind or the infrastructure around electric vehicle batteries. And all of that is going to be an area of much greater competition between two countries. A good thing for the planet, because it means much more money will be spent on sustainable energy and production, but a problematic thing for U.S.-China relations.
Given all these dynamics, how should Japan position itself?
Anything that the Japanese can do to promote multilateralism, especially in these new arenas of confrontation around data and technology and AI, around climate, it's to Japan's great advantage. Japan's most important security relationship, and it's not close, is the United States. Japan's most important economic relationship, and it's not close, is China. So to the extent that the U.S. and China are increasingly directly competing in lots of areas of the economic relationship, that's very bad for Japan. I mean, it's one thing if Canada has to make a choice for the U.S. It's a very different thing if Japan does.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 at 6155, 7245, and 7445, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.